On the morning of the day on which he would be kidnapped, Jimmy Afzal cut himself while shaving. It was a small nick, but it bled, and he was unhappy because he didn't want anything to serve as a distraction to the proposal he was pitching at his 9 a.m. meeting. He'd worked hard to earn this meeting. He was an associate editor with one of the few mid-sized independent publishing houses left in London. He had long wanted to do a series of non-fiction books with a brilliant man who had been nominated for a Nobel Prize in Physics and was a friend of his parents. When the gentleman was over for dinner, as he had been often at the Afzal family flat, he got to talking about physics and life in a way that was compelling and accessible. Jimmy just knew there was the potential for a series of books that could become classics. After careful wrangling, he had gotten the agreement of the friend, the support of his mentor editor, and an appointment with the executive editor of the company whose approval would be needed for such an ambitious project. An appointment that day, December 5th, 2005, at 9 a.m. Jimmy dressed in his best suit, skipped breakfast, pulled on his gray wool coat, and left his flat in Westbourne Gardens a half an hour early. The street noise, the people, the winter chill were all nothing more than backdrop to the presentation he was running again and again on a loop in his head. He was momentarily pleased that he'd reached the platform of the Queensway tube station of the Central Line just as a train was arriving. Perhaps the augur of good things to come. So lost was he in his own thoughts that it took him seconds to realize the air had somehow turned orange, that his eyes were tearing, his throat burning. Everyone else turning, coughing, panicking even, in an oh-so-British, "Excuse me, my good man, let me off the train and up the bloody escalator," kind of way. His eyes were burning now, but he was in the flow of people heading toward the exits. Emergency services were arriving. A voice of authority over the speaker system. "Stay calm. Exit in an orderly fashion." A young woman next to him was crying.
"I can't breathe. I can't breathe."
She was sobbing. He put an arm around her shoulder and said, "Don't panic. You'll suck in more bad air." But all he was thinking was, 9 a.m. This can't make me late. Damn terrorists. Then he was up and back outside. Ambulances, stretchers, constables, arriving news crews. He dropped off the girl, still sobbing, with emergency personnel and walked through the crowd of terrified people.
"Can't be late."
He started walking east on Bayswater, wondering if life was normal a street over. Behind him, blaring horns, snarled traffic, shrieking people. Chaos.
"Are you all right? What's going on?"
A woman's face leaned forward. He looked up to see a black limousine beside him. The back passenger window rolled down.
"Terrorist, I suppose. Chemical attack."
"Horrid. So sorry. You all right?"
"What? Yes, don't know about the others, but I'm fine. Eye sting, that's the worst, really."
"So sorry."
"Right, thanks.
You need any help?"
"I just need to get to work."
"Well, there I can help." The limo door popped open. "Climb in, then."
"Oh, no, don't want to bother."
"Come on, I'll feel I've done my part."
The limo's passenger was also dressed for work. Power dressed, black designer suit, black rimmed sunglasses.
"All right, maybe the day was saved after all. If you really mean it, thanks so much."
He climbed in and the car snaked forward. It had been past the tube entrance when the evacuation began, and now it was inching out of the area. Seemed it would be free of the mess fairly shortly.
"Where to?"
"Sorry,
where to?"
the woman asked, extending a hot cup of tea.
"Golden Rockman Publishing, it's..."
"I know it," she said, and smiled.
She picked up the telephone handset and had a brief discourse with the driver. "It's not far past my stop," she said.
"Not a problem." "Thanks so much."
Even given the favor the woman was doing him and the tea he was now holding, he again retreated into his head, into the midst of his presentation. The tea was in a real cup, with a saucer. It was heaven in his throat, which still burned. The woman finished her own tea, put the cup on the small table where the hot pot was, leaned across him and said,
"This is me."
The car rolled to a halt, and she climbed out in front of a chic building.
"Thanks so much," he said again as the car began to move.
"Thank you for seeing me, Mr. Rockman. I believe we have an extraordinary opportunity before us."
The words played again and again in Jimmy's mind. They were beginning to make less sense.